All right, everyone. The next presenting company is Fennec Pharma, and presenting is the CEO, Rosty Raykov.
Thank you. And this is our second year at the Wedbush Conference, and I appreciate the support that Wedbush has shown for our company, and thank you for your attendance. First slide, this is the standard safe harbor statement you're all familiar with. So, platinum-based chemotherapy, particularly cisplatin, has been a mainstay treatment in pediatric cancer since the 1980s. Throughout the years, physicians have been able to optimize the different treatment regimens to a point where, unlike adult cancer, we have very, very high survival in pediatrics. So these solid tumors, most of them respond very, very well to cisplatin. Cisplatin allows for the tumor to shrink so that the surgeon can extract it. And the survival, in many cases, is greater than 80%. I would say over the last 5 to 10 years, you have real importance around physicians monitoring the hearing loss of these patients. The biggest issue with cisplatin is hearing loss. Roughly 60% of these patients get it, and it's irreversible. So you can see from the pictures to the right and left, that's a baby with a cochlear implant, and next to it is a child with hearing aid. So this is what these kids, that once they get their hearing damaged, get. And physicians have really focused on how can we minimize this side effect. In fact, if you speak to most of them, they would respond that the biggest issue they face with cisplatin is the hearing loss. So our company is focused in the development of PEDMARQ. PEDMARQ is a unique formulation of sodium thiosulfate. We have been in two studies, which I'll get to that in a second, completed two phase III studies. But importantly, we have an orphan drug designation in the United States, which is a pediatric orphan drug designation of 7.5 years. And we just received a letter from Europe, which would make this drug eligible for a pediatric use marketing authorization in Europe, which would give us a 10-year exclusivity to the market. So we have completed two phase III studies, one with Children Oncology Group in the United States and Canada, and the second one, SIOP06, which is the SIOP organization, worldwide organization of pediatric oncology experts. And the L stands for liver, so this was their liver group. Both studies achieved highly statistical significance in their primary endpoints for the prevention of hearing loss. Importantly, the SIOP06 study did not show tumor protection associated with STS. Both studies were published in prestigious journals. The COG study was published in Lancet, and the SIOP06 study just got published in England Journal of Medicine, which is a major, major accomplishment for all the physicians and our team working with them. We also have received Fast Track and Breakthrough Therapy designation by the FDA, as well as we just received a positive opinion from PETCO on the pediatric investigational plan in Europe, which is the first threshold of approval before we file for approval with CHMP. Next steps, that's the important ones. We will be beginning to file the drug for approval toward the end of this year with the FDA and beginning of next year with Europe. Importantly, there's absolutely nothing available for these kids other than the suboptimal cochlear implants and hearing aids. So, once approved, STS will be the first therapy for the prevention of hearing of cisplatin-induced hearing loss. So, the ototoxicity for these kids, it's many physicians complain that as soon as they treat a child, by the first, second cycle, they get this hearing loss. And what ends up happening is they have to dose interrupt, dose reduce. In many times, they have to switch from cisplatin to carboplatin, which is also ototoxic, and in many cases more ototoxic when it's combined after cisplatin. The other issue with this treatment is that the high frequency gets to be affected. So all the consonants, the ability of these children to hear background noise is a real issue. As you can imagine, it's highly problematic in the very young patients. Those kids are in the process of acquiring language skills, and they have a really difficult time developing an IQ and proper functioning later in life because they don't acquire language skills very well. The older children, what we see with them is that they get depressed, they withdraw socially, they get made fun in school. So it's actually quite devastating for them as well. And it's particularly taxing on the parents because the parents are the ones that many of them have to, one of them at least has to stay at home to take care of these kids. So the good news is that we have long-term survivors of cancer in pediatrics. The bad news is that many of them have this major issue that they have to live with. So I'm on slide 7. This is actually a very, very good study that looked at neuroblastomas, one of the tumor types that these children are under the age of 5 when they get treated, typically. And they followed up long-term survivors, how they did in school throughout after treatment. So you could see by the time they reached the third grade, these are the ones with even minimum hearing loss. 30% of them are held back at least one grade. And by the time they were ninth grade, half of them were held back a grade, which speaks to what I mentioned earlier, how poorly these children develop with time. The two important risk factors that determine the hearing loss for these patients, one is the cumulative cisplatin dose. That's obvious. As more cisplatin is given to these patients, the higher the severity of the loss. And the second one is age. What we typically see is that from the 14 and under, they have quite a bit more hearing loss than the 14 and older. And that has to do a lot with the development and the acquisition of language and sound throughout their life before then. So this is sort of the quick overview of the market today. There's roughly 5,000 cases every year in the United States. These are children newly diagnosed solid tumors. They get platinum treatments, primarily cisplatin. In Europe, that number is about 6,000 of these kids. And you have roughly split of one-third, two-thirds, 30-70% of patients that have high-risk tumors versus low- to intermediate-risk tumors. The reason why that is important is we'll get to that in a second as to how potentially this drug would be used, as high-risk patients have roughly 50% survival, if that, and low- to intermediate-risk patients have greater than 80% survival, where quality of life really matters for these patients. So sodium thiosulfate on its own has been around since World War I. It's been approved in the U.S. and some European countries for as an antidote to cyanide poisoning. It comes together in a kit, and it is typically sold to firehouses as a sequential treatment with sodium nitrate. PEDMARK is delivered at 6 hours after the cisplatin therapy, over 15 minutes IV. And STS standalone is also considered a GRAS. Mechanistically, how the drug works, and this is the important emphasis on the 6-hour separation from the cisplatin dose, is that you have typically 1, 2, or 6 hour infusions, cisplatin infusions. The anti-cancer activity of cisplatin takes place within those first 2 to 3 hours of treatment, as the half-life of cisplatin is very short, is 20 to 30 minutes in these patients. By the time STS enters the body, there is less than 5% of the active platinum present, and STS binds irreversibly to the bound platinum, which is in abundance at that time, since most of it has been bound to plasma, in the plasma, and excretes it out. So it does a very good job as a free scavenger to take those bound platinum complexes out. What we also do know is that this bound platinum actually remains in the cochlear for a longer period of time, and this is why STS does such a good job in chelating it out. So our first study was with Children Oncology Group. There were 130 patients roughly enrolled in the study. The study was close to a real-life study as possible. It took various solid tumors with various severity over a period of 4 years of enrollment. As you could see on the right, this is the schema of the study. Cisplatin was given per the investigator protocol or regimen for each disease type and each severity of disease. So we're dealing with highly heterogeneous population pool here. The primary endpoint of the study was the difference in hearing loss between the group that did get STS versus the group that did not get STS. And again, there's a six-hour delay from when the cisplatin infusion was last ended. The secondary endpoint, the important one being to monitor event-free survival and overall survival for these patients. So this, on slide 12, you could see here the heterogeneity of these patients. We have a various representation of various ages for these kids. We also have a big list here of solid tumors that are treated with cisplatin-containing regimen. It's a pretty much in all these cases, a multi-drug regimen, so cisplatin is not given standalone. And you obviously also have localized tumors and disseminated tumors with a different degree of severity for these patients. And they try to randomize and then select the patients the best that they can from group to group. So the study met its primary endpoint. You could see here that very similar to what the literature had reported that I shared earlier with you, 56% of these patients without STS in the showed hearing loss, and then the patients with STS showed roughly 29% hearing loss. So roughly reduced STS reduced the risk in half for the hearing loss. You could see in a protocol predefined subgroup of the 5 and under, the magnitude was even greater. 73% had hearing loss versus 21% with a highly statistical p-value. When they looked for all of these highly heterogeneous tumors, the event-free survival and overall survival, they did not see a difference in neither one of those. However, in the publication, the physicians at COG noticed the separation after 2 years of survival. There were 6 excess deaths on the STS arm, which worried a bit the physicians. And so they decided to perform a pulse hoc analysis to see what could be driving this separation of survival. So what they found is that looking through all the prognosticating factors that they tried to collect in the CRF, the only thing they were able to correlate this with was that in localized disease, they did not see a difference in 77 patients. But in disseminated disease, this is where the excess deaths had occurred. So the conclusion is that, of course, this is post hoc analysis and it's difficult to determine what was really driving this. For us, having to look at this data very, very carefully, it's very difficult to fully determine what's causing this. What's interesting is that if you sort of look on the one on the left, the number of events was roughly the same yet there were a survival difference, which seems to indicate that perhaps that was not that we might have gotten sicker kids. The other important issue with, again, this post-hoc analysis is that if you look at the survival curve for the for the non-STS arm, it comes in at 3 years of greater than or around 80%, which is very similar to the survival curve that you see in localized disease. And typically for these tumors, you don't see 80% survival in general. And what we believe is that if you look at overall in the entire data set, and also how STS works, actually. So the cisplatin label is, that's actually really important. In the cisplatin label, it says that bound platinum does not exert any anti-tumor activity. At 6 hours after the administration is given, there is very little unbound platinum that we're chelating out. So it's very difficult for us to see how STS could be doing this. But nevertheless, this finding is there. We actually think that the excess deaths that you're seeing are really driven by the heterogeneity of the tumor types, and in particular, these other tumors right here, as the excess deaths are occurring in the other tumors right here. So we have a second study, which is actually the pivotal study, and it's quite important. So this study, unlike the COG study, only focused in patients with localized disease and one disease, which is a rare liver tumor disease for these patients. So it's a solid tumor in the liver. It's called standard risk hepatoblastoma. It typically occurs in children that are 13 months old. These children are treated with cisplatin as a monotherapy. So you don't have a multi-drug regimen like you have in the COG study. And what's really important is that when they build a study, they actually looked at the IDMC, looked at every 20 patients to make sure that STS does not interfere with the antitumor activity of cisplatin. Importantly, also, you have a very high survival of this tumor. So you have 90% survival. So these children are living post their treatment with cisplatin. And given that they're so young, they get quite a bit of hearing damage from the cisplatin therapy. So the primary endpoint, of course, was to measure the hearing loss between the groups that got STS and the group that did not get STS. And the secondary, the important one, being the event-free survival and overall survival for these patients. So we enrolled here 109 patients. You could see the schema of the study here. Cisplatin was given in 4 cycles, then there's delayed surgery, and then 2 additional cycles of cisplatin, and you have 90% response rate. And that correlates very well to survival, 90% survival. So, and below you could see cisplatin is given with a delayed 6 hours of STS. So the, and this was just, this just got published in the New England Journal of Medicine, so you could see the patients that, with 101 evaluable patients, the cisplatin alone patients had 63% hearing loss, again, very confirmatory to what we saw from the COG study, versus 32.7. So again, we roughly half the risk for hearing loss. This is basically looking at the grade sensitivity for these patients. So BRCA grade 0, it's actually, these patients have minimal hearing loss. So after grade 1, these patients require hearing aids, and then by the time they reach 3 and 4, they require cochlear implants. The next slide, which is the important one, is the event-free survival and overall survival. So this is with a 52-month follow-on. So quite a, quite mature for this tumor type. Typically, after 2 years, there's no recurrence in this disease, and everybody lives. So you could see that there was no difference. Importantly, when it comes to survival, there were 6 deaths in total in the study. 4 deaths were on the cisplatin alone arm versus 2 deaths on the cisplatin plus STS. So what can we say from the data sets that we have in front of us and both publications? It's very clear, I think, that STS works very well on the prevention of hearing loss for these patients. This effect is particularly acute in and shown in the children under the age of five, where the need, I would argue, is the greatest. In addition, it's very clear that at least on a post hoc analysis from the COG study and on the what we saw from, with the survival from the hepatoblastoma study, is that there is no evidence of tumor interference with the chemotherapy. That's obviously something that is quite important. So I wish that the CYPO-6 study also had disseminated disease patients as well. We obviously have not answered that question. And perhaps in the future, there will need to be a study in disseminated disease down the line. So where we are today in terms of filing for the drug, so we, as I mentioned, we just received a positive, so we received the fast track and breakthrough designation by the FDA. This was in March. We also received a positive opinion from PETCO at EMA. We are in the process of organizing. We've been working very diligently and hard in the last several months in putting together the NDA for this. We expect to commence the submission by the end of this year with the FDA. It would be a rolling submission, and in Europe shortly thereafter, with the idea of completing those submissions by the first quarter next year. And then from there, there will be 270 days in Europe and at least 6 months in the U.S. So that puts us into sort of the third, fourth quarter next year for approval in the U.S., as well as in Europe would be toward the end of the year, beginning of next year. So this is a bit on our stock, and you know, we're NASDAQ traded, roughly a couple hundred million market cap. We have $25 million in cash with no debt at the moment. We have a something I'm really proud of is how we spent capital in this company. So we've burned about $3 million since the beginning of the year until June 30th. Last year we burned $4 million. We keep things very, very tight. We don't spend money when it's unnecessary. And we have a very strong institutional shareholder base. Many of these investors have been with us for a very long period of time, and we don't typically like to dilute them. As you could see, also the insider ownership is quite high. And a little bit on the board, they have been very experienced in the pediatric oncology space, having worked on a couple of compounds that they were able to monetize successfully. One, defibrotide, that is used for patients with stem cell transplant, in particularly many of these tumor types require stem cell transplant in pediatrics. And the other one being Oncaspar, which is sold exclusively in the pediatric oncology space. And we have Sigma Tau, Lydian, formerly known as Sigma Tau, as our 20% strategic investor in the company. So with that, I would open it up for questions. So the question is, will file with hepatoblastoma, how do I feel about the use of the product outside of that? So we are filing both studies. So we're not filing just the hepatoblastoma study. So regulators would have in front of them the data sets for both. And ultimately, they'll have to make the determination, is the combined data set enough for a larger indication? We don't know the answer to that question. Hopefully, we'll know that in the next 6 months, where that stands. The question is, are we currently receiving compassion use requests? Thank you for the question. Yes, we do. We've actually have a compassionate use program. It's called the Named Patient Program in Europe. we provide the drug for free, and only for standard risk hepatoblastoma patients. So since since the publication in the New England Journal of Medicine, we have received several requests, and we have treated patients with standard risk hepatoblastoma. And we have also treated patients in the U.S. as well. No, we're not charging anything for the drug. It's important for us not to do that. Both of these studies were funded with taxpayers' money, so this is sort of our way of expressing our gratitude with the two organizations that we work with. And we've also received actually several requests for drug outside of hepatoblastoma, which we have not fulfilled.
Can you name how many patients have you treated?
So I want to say, since the data probably, hepatoblastoma is very rare, but I would say about five. The question is around drug manufacturing and what we need to do there. So we manufactured the drug recently. The drug has to be on stability for a certain amount of time before the submission occurs. In addition to that, it's not just the CMC section, it's also the clinical section that we're working through diligently with investigators and our own internal team. And we do it in parallel for a European submission as well. And there's also, of course, preclinical section as well. In addition to all of that, obviously, post-marketing commitments, potential post-marketing commitments in preparing for those two. So it's the dossier is actually quite large. Yeah, so what the question is, what does stability mean? So the drug has to be stable at various temperature points for a period of time. And so there's shorter-term stability and there's longer-term stability. Thank you.